This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. This April, researchers at the University of Pittsburgh started a clinical trial on a procedure called emergency preservation and resuscitation. Doctors remove all of the blood from a severely injured patient's body and replace it with cold salt water to bring the body temperature down in an attempt to buy more time for surgeons to operate before injury to the nervous system. This would only be in extreme cases. Now, doctors know that people who fall into frozen lakes, for example, can survive for longer periods of time without brain damage due to the immersion in cold water, and they use cold temperatures to preserve transplant organs for years. But up until now, they have not tried to remove blood and replace it with freezing salt water to buy more time to operate. Could this work for the entire body? What effect does this refrigeration have on our bodies? And how do you test a new product and procedure in a trauma setting? What about ethical considerations in the people you're trying it on? Hassan Alam is the Norman Thompson Professor of Surgery and Head of General Surgery at the University of Michigan Healthcare System in Ann Arbor. He has been successfully testing this idea on pigs, and he joins us from WUOM. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you very much, Eric.
Tell us about your research and the technique that you use in the pigs. Take us through a step-by-step of how you do this.
Yeah, so let's look at the sort of the global question. And the question here is that if somebody is bleeding to death and the blood pressure has gone down so low that the heart is not beating, from that point onward, you have few minutes. The brain dies in about 3 to 4 minutes. The heart, you can't bring it back in about 15, 20 minutes. And even if you get the heart started and it's more than 3 or 4 minutes, then you have somebody in a vegetative state. And the limiting factor is not the underlying injuries often, but it is the amount of time the brain can be deprived of oxygen. So the basic concept here is not science fiction, but how can we extend that window, which is very small, 3 to 4 or 5 minutes tops, into something more meaningful where a surgeon can plug up the hole, fill the tank back up, restart the heart, and have a person who survives. And there are a number of strategies that people are working across the country. It's a challenge that we all feel. Young people die of injuries all the time. As a matter of fact, more young Americans die of injuries than all of the diseases put together. And it's a huge impact on the society. So the basic concept here is that you cool the body down, and we don't replace the blood with fluids. The blood has already left the body. I mean, that's why they have arrested. But instead of trying to fill it back up with blood, you've cooled the body down rapidly to a core temperature of about 10 to 15 degrees Celsius, normal body temperature being about 37. And what that does is it converts a 90 to 100% lethal situation into about a 90% potentially survivable situation, because the body goes in a state of, so-called suspended animation, where you're still alive, but the metabolic functions are so low that you don't require oxygen, and that the brain can be deprived of oxygen and still not die. And that gives surgeons the time, and it could be up to 2 to 3 hours to fix the underlying injuries. And that's what we've done in animal models.
Yeah, you've tested out in animals, and they appear, for all intents and purposes, to be normal again when you bring them back.
Yeah, when we started doing it a few years ago, I was a junior trauma attending, and I got funding from NIH to do it. And the first few studies we published, we were really excited about it, just the fact that we had nearly 100% lethal injury model, and we had these pigs who survived. And the first question I got asked when I started presenting at the meetings was, are they smart? And first you kind of baffled us, like, they're alive. I mean, isn't that enough? So, well, they're smart. So we designed a whole bunch of these very elaborate strategies to check the cognitive function. And I realized two things. One, that pigs are really smart animals, and they will do anything for food. So we presented them with different boxes. They had to open the boxes, retrieve food. They were color-coded. We looked at the brains under a microscope. We looked at the neurocognitive function. And not only you can survive an injury with no measurable signs of life for many hours, but you're smart. We trained them before they were cooled down and brought them back. They remembered the stuff that they were taught before. And they learned new skills just as well as non-injured animals. So it's pretty exciting preclinical data, and now obviously the challenge is how do we translate it into clinical practice.
And that's what they're trying to do at the University of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, that's a trial that's been many years in the making. For many years, there were two centers in the U.S. doing this research. I was at the Uniformed Services University of Health Sciences in Bethesda, and then I went to Boston at the Massachusetts General Hospital, and then the Pittsburgh team. I was doing it in large human-sized swines, and they were doing it in another large animal model. It's very exciting result, and we all collaborated. So there are about five different centers collaborating on this project, and the lead is University of Pittsburgh, as you mentioned. And the idea here is to take trauma patients who come in, who have lost all signs of life right in front of your eyes, and in normal situations you would try something heroic and try to revive him, but it's very difficult to revive somebody if there's no blood left in the body. Mm-hmm. And at that time, you'll have to make a decision if you think the underlying injury is potentially salvageable and all you need is more time, then, you know, we'll mm-hmm. cool the body down and provide the surgical team extra time to see whether the underlying injuries are fixable or not.
Mm-hmm. What about some of the ethical considerations here? If humans are normally part of a study, there has to be a review panel where people have to sign off paperwork. But if you're coming into a hospital and you're almost dead, you sort of can't do that, can you?
Well, paradoxically, when you do a trial on patients that cannot give consent, the barrier is much, much higher. And rightfully so, because we have to protect a fairly vulnerable population. So there is still the Institutional Review Board. The trial, by the way, is approved by the FDA. But every center that will enroll patients or perform this thing will have to get an approval from their own institutional review board. And there are federal regulations that sort of oversee trials in any patient population that just don't have the capacity to give consent. Pre-hospital cardiac arrest, trauma patient being one example. And the process for that is called waiver of informed consent. And to get a waiver, you have to educate the entire target population. So if you do it in a city of Ann Arbor where I am, or before coming here I was in Boston, you would have to educate the entire potential patient population, which is, you know, mm-hmm. majority of the city, and give them a way to opt out. And then you take all that data and then you go back to the Institutional Review Board and say, you know, this is what we've done to educate the community. You go to the churches, school, legislative bodies, take out ads online, so on and so forth. And then the Institutional Review Board that has not only subject matter experts, but ethicists, representatives from the public, they all look at the burden and say, yes, you have met, you've satisfied us that you can go ahead with the trial. Otherwise, you don't. Mm-hmm. So you don't get a pass on it. In many ways, you raise the bar up. And that's why it's extremely difficult and challenging and time-consuming and expensive to do these trials.
Because you could bring somebody back, but you could bring them back to a vegetative state, could you not?
There is always that chance. And I think some of the same concerns were expressed when we started doing cardiac surgery or cardiopulmonary bypass or transplant surgery. And, I mean, you can imagine 50 years ago if somebody had said, I will take the heart out of this patient and put it into another person, it would be considered absolutely crazy. And now we do it all the time with cardiac transplant and liver mm-hmm. transplant and cardiopulmonary bypass and congenital cardiac anomalies in little babies that get fixed with circulatory arrest. All of these things were science fiction and raised a lot of angst in the not just in the medical community, but in public as well. Mm-hmm. And successfully, we did overcome them, and, you know, within a lifetime, they have become now part of mainstream standard of care. So I do understand the concerns, but what it forces us to do is not to avoid the issue, but to approach it and approach it in a systematic fashion.
And in fact, that's what you've done in your studies with laboratory animals. This, how surprisingly well it has worked when you've tried it.
Right, and that was exactly the reason for doing fairly well-designed translational studies, not just to get a yes or no answer. But it's I've been involved with it since 2002. But the research in this area goes back even another decade. So it's the nuts and bolts. I mean, how fast to cool, how fast to rewarm, what's the optimal fluid to do it. The every nuts and bolts, and then what's the impact at the cellular level, what's the impact of neurocognitive function. So you raise the bar pretty high for all these things, and you publish study after study and ask a different question every time. And then you put all that cumulative data in front of the FDA and say, you know, this is what we've done over the last 20 years, so take a look at this information. Does this justify doing a trial? Yeah. And I have to remind you, I mean, we're doing a trial in patients who have otherwise no hope.
And
so it's not as if they have another option. I mean, either you pronounce them dead or you try to save their life.
And how long will the trial go on? And when does it become more widespread? What does it take if it is successful?
So at this stage, the trial is a feasibility trial, which essentially means that nobody is getting randomized into anything, which is sort of the highest level of trial where you give them treatment A versus treatment B. Here we have really exciting and potentially a field-changing data in well-designed animal studies. And the question here is whether we can replicate that in real-life trauma patients. So it's a feasibility trial, and after that you go back to the FDA and show the data, and either it would show that, you know, the science is strong, but the logistics of doing it in real-life trauma patient with much more chaotic situation, maybe elderly patient, maybe patients with comorbid problems, cardiac disease, so on and so forth. Yes, it's a doable thing. And if it's a doable thing, then it will lead to a next phase of trial where it would be a larger number of patients and more centers doing it. Because right now, just the expertise to do it is limited to very few centers.
One quick question, because I got about 30 seconds. Could this also open up to saving body parts, kidneys, organs that might be lost also that might be transplanted now?
Absolutely, and I'm glad that you brought it up, because in many ways you can look at it as a way of preserving the option for organ donation for somebody who, you know, you cool them down and you realize the underlying injuries are really not fixable. But it preserves the option that, you know, if they are a potential organ donor or the family decides to give the organs, suddenly it may save the life of seven other people.
All right. We've run out of time, Dr. Alam. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, Ira, thank you for inviting me.
You're
it's a pleasure.
Hassan Alam is a head of general surgery at the University of Michigan Healthcare System in Ann Arbor, Michigan.